As I told you earlier, Ben is somewhat of a celebrity, even in prison. He receives correspondence from all around the world. According to the warden, Ben traffics in information. This is how he gets extra meals and protection inside the dangerous walls of Death Row. He finds out what people want to know, and he doles it out to them at his pleasure. Images. How did Ben know that this word, of all words, would jog my memory? That it would send me running back to my wall, shuffling through my stack of notebooks, looking for the words I had transcribed from your file almost 6 whole years ago. After 10 months, after 48 visits, did Ben know my mind that well? The question will remain unanswered. Ben is the type of psychopath who claims he likes the wind to direct his sails. But occasionally, I have seen him dip his hand into the water, rudder-like, to change the course. And with that one word, images, he changed the course of my life. The Peeping Tom's name was Gerald Scott. His son is your baby sister's new boyfriend. Chapter 12. Claire opened her eyes. The popcorn ceiling had a brownish tinge. The shag carpet felt damp against her back. She was lying on the floor. A pillow was under her head. Her tennis shoes were off. She sat up. Paul. He was alive. Claire felt a singular moment of absolute elation before she came hurtling back down to earth. Then her mind filled with questions. Why had he faked his death? Why had he fooled her? Who had helped him? What was he doing at the Fuller house? Why had he punched her? And where was her sister? Lydia? Claire could barely get out the word. Her throat was on fire. She pulled herself up to standing. She fought a rushing nausea as she stumbled against the television. Her cheekbones sent out small explosions of pain. Liddy? She tried. Her voice was still hoarse, but the panic spurred her to scream as loud as she could. Liddy! There was no answer. Claire ran down the hallway toward the garage. She threw open the door. The videotapes, the chains, the blood, they were all still there, but no Lydia. She pulled the door shut behind her as she ran back down the hallway. She checked the bedrooms, the bathroom, the kitchen, her panic ratcheting higher with each vacant room. Lydia was gone. She was missing. Someone had taken her. Paul had taken her. Just like his father had taken Julia. Claire ran onto the back porch. She scanned the field behind the house. She jogged around to the front, her heart pounding like a jackhammer. She wanted to scream and cry and rail. How had this happened again? Why had she let Lydia out of her sight? The Tesla was still parked in the driveway. The car door handle slid out when Claire approached. The system had sensed the key fob, which had somehow ended up in her back pocket. Both her purse and Lydia's were dumped out on the front seat of the car. The burner phone was gone. A long, orange extension cord snaked from the front porch to the driveway and connected to the cable that charged the Tesla. Inside the house, the phone started to ring. Claire ran toward the back. She stopped at the kitchen door. She wanted to go in, to answer the phone, but she found herself paralyzed with fear. She stared at the ringing phone. It was white. The cord hung below, stopping several feet short of the floor. Their kitchen phone in the house on Boulevard had a cord that could stretch into the pantry because that was the only place for years that any of them could talk with a modicum of privacy. Lydia was gone. Paul had taken her. This was happening. She couldn't stop it. She couldn't hide in her room with her headphones on and pretend the world outside was still spinning blissfully on its axis. Claire forced herself to go into the kitchen. She pressed her palm against the phone, but did not pick it up. She felt the cold plastic under her hand. This was a sturdy old princess phone, the kind you used to rent monthly from Southern Bell. She could feel the vibrations of the metal bell ringing through her palm. The answering machine had been turned off. A pillow had been placed under her head. Her shoes had been removed. The Tesla was being charged. She knew whose voice she would hear before she even picked up the phone. Paul said, "Are you all right?" "Where's my sister?"
"She's safe."
Paul hesitated.
"Are you okay?"
"No, I'm not okay, you motherfucking piece of..." Claire's voice strangled around the words. She went into a coughing fit that brought up enough blood to spray the back of her hand. Claire stared at the red lines streaking across her pale flesh. Paul asked,
"Is that blood?"
Claire spun around the room. Was he inside the house? Standing outside? He said,
"Look up."
Claire looked up.
"A little to your left."
Claire spotted what looked like an air freshener on top of the refrigerator. There was a stem of green eucalyptus leaves carved on a taupe vase. One of the leaves had been cut all the way through to accommodate a camera lens. He said,
"There are more, all around the house."
"This house or the Dunwoody house?" Paul didn't answer, which was answer enough. He had been watching her. That was why there wasn't a colored file with Claire's name on the label. Paul wasn't hiring detectives to stalk her 1 month out of the year. He was stalking her every single day of her life. She said, "Where is Lydia?"
"I'm calling you from a ComSat phone with a scrambler. Do you know what that is?"
"Why the fuck would I know what that is?"
"ComSat is an abbreviation for a series of communication satellites," he explained, his voice maddeningly pedantic. "The phone relays calls through geostationary satellites instead of land-based cell towers. The scrambler masks the number and location, which means this call can't be traced, not even by the NSA.
Claire wasn't listening to his voice. She was listening to the ambient noise. She didn't need the NSA to tell her Paul was in a moving car. She could hear road noises and the sound of wind that always seeped in no matter how expensive the vehicle. Claire asked, "Is she alive?" He didn't answer. Her heart twisted so tight she could barely breathe. "Is Lydia alive?"
"Yes."
Claire stared into the lens of the camera. "Put her on the phone now."
"She's unavailable."
"If you hurt her..." Claire felt her throat tighten. She had seen the movies. She knew what could happen. "Please don't hurt her."
"I'm not going to hurt her, Claire.
You know I would never do that." Tears finally came because, for just a second, just the tiniest second, she let herself believe him. "Let me talk to my sister right now, or I will call every goddamn law enforcement agency in the book." Paul sighed. She knew that sigh. It was the one he gave when he was about to give Claire what she wanted. She heard the sound of a car pulling over. There was a rustling noise. "What are you doing?"
I'm doing what you asked. The car door opened and closed. She heard other vehicles speeding by. He must be on the Atlanta highway. How long had Claire been out? How far away had he gotten with Lydia? She said, "Your father killed my sister." There was a squeaking sound as a door or a trunk was opened. "It's him in the video, isn't it?" Claire waited. "Paul, tell me. It's him, isn't it?"
"Yes," Paul said. "Check the phone."
"What?"
"Lydia's phone. It's in the den. I hooked it up to the charger because the battery was low."
Jesus Christ. Only Paul would kidnap someone and charge their fucking phone. Claire set the telephone down on the table. She went into the den, but instead of looking for the cell phone, she scanned the perimeter of the room. Another air freshener was on top of a veneered cherry bookshelf by the front door. How had she not seen that before? How had she not seen any of this?
Lydia's phone made a chirping sound. Paul had left it plugged in on the table by the couch. The screen showed a text from an unknown number. She swiped the notice, and a photo of Lydia came up. Claire cried out. Lydia's forehead was bleeding. One eye was swollen closed. She was lying on her side in the trunk of a car. Her hands were zip-tied in front of her. She looked terrified and furious, and so alone. Claire looked up at the camera on the bookshelf and stared all of her hate through the wires and straight into Paul's black hole of a heart.
"I'm going to kill you for this. I don't know how, but I am going to." Claire didn't know what she was going to do.
She looked back down at the picture of Lydia. This was all Claire's fault. So many times she had told Lydia to leave, and she hadn't meant it once. She had wanted her sister to keep her safe, and she'd ended up leading Lydia right into Paul's hands. She heard a car pull into the driveway. Claire's heart leapt. Lydia. Paul had brought her back. She opened the front door. Plywood. There was a sliver of light around the edge. If Claire craned her neck the right way, she could see through the crack and into the driveway. Instead of Paul, she saw a brown sheriff's patrol car. Her view was narrow. The front windshield was dark against the afternoon light. She couldn't tell who was inside. The driver stayed behind the wheel for an interminably long time. Claire heard her breath stuttering out as she waited. Finally, the door was opened. A leg came out and rested on the concrete drive. She saw a tooled leather cowboy boot and dark brown pants with a yellowish stripe going up the side. Two hands grasped the door surround as the man pulled himself out of the car. He stood there for a moment, his back to Claire, as he checked the empty road. And then he turned around. Sheriff Carl Huckabee put on his Stetson hat as he walked up the driveway. He stopped to look inside the Tesla. He took in the charger plugged into the side of the car and followed the extension cord with his eyes to the front porch of the house. Claire pulled back from the door, though there was no way he could see her. Huckleberry was older and more stooped, but he still sported the same finely combed, linear mustache and two long sideburns that had looked out of date, even in the 90s. He had to be working with Paul. It made a sick kind of sense that the man her parents had run to for help was the same man who strung them along all these years. Claire ran back to the kitchen. Before picking up the phone, she grabbed a sharp paring knife off the floor. She put the phone to her ear. She held up the knife for Paul to see. "I'll slice open his neck if you don't give me my sister back right now."
"What are you talking about?" Paul demanded. Whose neck?
You know who I...
Claire stopped. Maybe he didn't know. The point of putting cameras on the outside of your house was that people would see them. Paul was only concerned with what was going on inside.
Claire?
Huckabee. He just pulled up.
Fuck.
Paul muttered.
Get rid of him right now or you'll never see Lydia again.
Claire didn't know what to do.
Promise me she'll be okay.
I promise. Don't hang up the...
Claire hung up the phone. She turned around and faced the open kitchen doorway. The paring knife went into her back pocket, even as she asked herself what the hell she thought she was going to do with it. Her mind was overwhelmed with fragments of thoughts she couldn't chase away. Why had Paul pretended to be murdered? Why had he taken Lydia? What did he want with her?
Hello?
Huckabee's heavy footsteps pounded up the porch stairs.
Anybody here?
Hi.
Claire heard the scratchiness in her voice. There was still blood coming from somewhere inside her throat. She kept thinking about Lydia. Claire had to keep calm for Lydia's sake.
Miss Carroll.
The sheriff's expression had changed from one of curiosity to wariness.
What are you doing here?
It's Mrs. Scott, she corrected, hating the sound of the name. This house belonged to my husband. He passed away recently, so I...
Thought you'd ransack it?
He was looking at the mess Claire had made of the kitchen. Silverware, pots and pans, Tupperware, and anything else that had been inside a drawer or cabinet was now littering the floor. He lifted his foot, which had crunched some of the broken glass from the back door.
You want to tell me what's really going on here?
Claire started twisting her wedding ring around her finger. She tried to put some authority in her voice.
Why are you here?
Got an emergency call, but there wasn't nobody stayed on the line.
He tucked his thumbs into his belt.
Was that you?
I dialed it by accident. I meant to dial information. Claire stifled a cough. I'm sorry I wasted your time.
What's your husband's name again?
Paul Scott. Claire remembered that the name on the property deed was different. The house is held in a trust with his law firm, Buckminster and Fuller. The sheriff nodded, but he didn't seem satisfied.
Looks like it's been boarded up for a while.
Did you know my husband?
I knew his mama and daddy. Good people.
Claire couldn't stop twisting her wedding ring. And then she looked down at her hand, because the snake man had taken her ring. How had it gotten back on her finger?
Mrs. Scott.
She squeezed her hands into fists. She wanted to yank off the ring and grind it in the garbage disposal. How had Paul gotten the ring back? Why had he put it on her finger? Why were her shoes off and the key fob in her pocket? Why was there a fucking pillow under her head when she woke up from her husband knocking the shit out of her? And where in God's name was he taking her sister?
What's this?
Huckabee touched his hand to his own cheek.
Looks like you got a shiner coming up.
Claire started to touch her cheek, but then she ran her fingers through her hair. Panic threatened to consume her. She could feel a physical pain in her skull from the strain of trying to process what had happened and what she needed to do next. Huckabee asked,
"You need to sit down?"
"I need answers."
Claire knew that she sounded crazy. "My father-in-law, Gerald Scott, you're sure that he's dead?" He gave her a curious look.
"Saw it with my own eyes. At least, after the fact."
Claire had seen Paul die with her own eyes. She had held him in her arms. She had watched the life drain out of him. Then she had watched him punch her in the face. Huckabee leaned his shoulder against the door jamb.
Something going on here I need to know about.
The phone started to ring. Claire didn't move. Huckabee shifted on his feet. He looked at the phone, then back at Claire. Paul wasn't going to hang up. The ringing continued until the sound was like a chisel shaving down her eardrum. Claire picked up the receiver and slammed it back down. Huckabee raised one of his shaggy eyebrows. The man who, for 24 years, had insisted that her beautiful 19-year-old sister had simply turned her back on her family and joined a hippie commune, was suddenly suspicious. The phone started to ring again. Claire imagined Paul sitting in a car somewhere on the side of the road, watching all of this and being absolutely furious that Claire wasn't doing exactly what he'd told her to do.
He should know her better than that by now.
Claire slid the wedding ring off her finger. She placed it in front of the camera on top of the fridge. She turned around to face the sheriff.
I know what happened to Julia.
Huckabee was a heavy breather, obviously a long-time smoker, so it was hard to tell whether or not he sighed or just exhaled normally.
Did your mother tell you?
Claire leaned against the fridge so she wouldn't sink to the floor. She felt the shock of his statement, but worked to keep the turmoil off her face. Had Helen known about the tapes all these years? Had she kept it a secret from Claire? Had she hidden the truth from Sam? She tried to bluff Huckabee again.
Yes, she told me.
Well, I'm surprised by that, Claire, because your mother said she wasn't ever going to tell you girls, and I'm finding it hard to believe that a woman like that would go back on her word.
Claire shook her head. Because this man knew there were videos of her sister being brutally murdered, and he was lecturing her like she was 12, and he was disappointed in her.
How could you keep it from me?
From Lydia?
I promised your mother. I know you don't think much of me, but I honor my word.
You're talking about your fucking word when I've been haunted by this for 24 years?
There's no need to use that kind of language.
Fuck you! Claire could almost see the black hatred spewing from her mouth. You kept saying she was alive, that she'd just run off, that we'd see her come back one day. You knew all along that she was never coming back, but you gave us hope! She could tell he still didn't understand. Do you know what hope does to people? Do you know what it's like to see somebody in the street, to chase after them because you think she might be your sister? Or to go to the mall and see two sisters together and know that you're never going to have that? Or to go to my father's funeral without her? Or to get married without... Claire couldn't go down that road, because she had married Paul, and the reason that Lydia hadn't been by her side is because Claire's husband had tried to rape her. Huckabee said,
"Tell me how you really found out. Was it the internet?"
She nodded because that seemed most believable. He looked down at the floor.
"I always worried the tapes would get put out there."
Claire knew she should get rid of the sheriff, but she couldn't stop herself from asking, "How did you find out about them?"
Your father's apartment. He had one of them loaded on his video player while he did it. I expect, well, that's what made him.
He didn't have to finish the sentence. They both knew what her father had done. Now that Claire knew Sam Carroll had seen the tapes, had been watching them while he put the needle into his arm, she finally understood why. She could very well imagine her father wanting to end his life as he watched Julia's being taken from her. The act had an appealing kind of symmetry. Was that the reason Helen had concealed the truth?
Was she afraid that Claire would find copies of the tapes and end up following in her father's footsteps? And Lydia? Poor, fragile Lydia. No one saw it at the time, but her addiction had never been about the high. It had been about the escape. She had been actively seeking ways to destroy herself. Claire asked the sheriff, "What did you do with the tapes?"
"Handed them over to a buddy of mine, was in the FBI. We always wondered, was there copies? I guess now we know."
Claire looked down at her hands. She was twisting her finger, even without the ring.
Huckabee said, "You ain't gotta try and trick me, gal. She was your sister. I'll tell you the truth."
Claire had never wanted to physically hurt someone so badly in her life. He was acting like he'd been willing all along. When Claire had contacted the sheriff countless times over the years, asking if there were any new updates. "Then tell me." He smoothed down the edges of his mustache, as if he needed time to figure out how to go about breaking her heart. Finally, he said,
"Fella in the movie was part of some kind of ring that distributed a lot of them videos. My friend, like I said, he was in the FBI, so I got some of the inside scoop on it. He said they already knew about the guy. Name was Daryl Lassiter. Caught him in California back in 94, trying to snatch a gal the same age, same hair color, same build as your sister."
Claire was confused. Had she been wrong about Paul's father? Was there another murderer out there? Had Paul's father come by the tapes as a collector?
Huckabee said, "Lassiter's dead now, if it helps."
No. There was the barn that had been outside, and the kill room not 15 feet away from where they stood.
"Jury put him on death row." Huckabee looped his thumbs back through his belt. "There was some kind of scuffle at the jailhouse. Lassiter got stabbed in the neck about a dozen times. He died around the same time your pa died."
Claire tried to think of what to ask next. "Where did Daddy get the tapes?" Huckabee shrugged.
"No idea."
"You didn't look into it?"
"Course I did."
Huckabee sounded offended, as if he was actually good at his job.
"But your daddy was always on wild goose chases, one after another. There was no telling which one actually panned out, and he wasn't exactly sharing his information with me."
"You weren't exactly encouraging him to." Huckabee shrugged again, more water under the bridge than, "I'm sorry I left your father so alone that he killed himself." But then again, Helen had left Sam alone, too. And then she had lied to Lydia and Claire for years about everything that mattered. Was there anyone in Claire's life who ever told her the truth? Even Lydia had lied about her daughter. She asked, "Why would Daddy kill himself before finding out who killed Julia?"
"He left the tape playing out on the machine. He knew we'd find it. I mean, that's what I figured he left it for. And he was right. I turned it straight over to the feds. In less than a week, they connected it to the man who killed your sister."
Claire didn't remind the sheriff that the Carrolls had begged him for years to go to the FBI. "And you never made it public so people would know what happened to my sister?"
"Your mom asked me not to. I guess she was worried you girls would look for the tapes."
He glanced over Claire's shoulder into the den.
"My thinking is, she figured it'd be better to never know than to find out the truth."
Claire wondered if her mother was right. Then she wondered how different her life would have been if she'd known that Julia was really gone. How many times had Claire quietly shut herself into her office and cried because an unidentified body had been found in the Athens area. How many missing girl cases had kept her awake at night? How many hours had she spent searching the internet for cults and hippie compounds and any word of her missing sister?
Well, that's all I know.
Huckabee shifted uncomfortably on his feet.
I hope it brings you some peace.
Like it did my father? She resisted the urge to tell the sheriff that Sam Carroll might still be alive if the sheriff had done his fucking job.
Anyway,
Huckabee glanced around the kitchen again.
I told you what you wanted to know. You want to tell me why you're standing in the middle of all this mess with a knife in your back pocket?
No, I don't. Claire wasn't finished questioning him. There was one more thing she had to ask, though she felt in her gut that she already knew the answer. Paul had a mentor, a man who had single-handedly ensured that Quinn and Scott jumped into the stratosphere, a man who took chartered flights and stayed in expensive hotel rooms thanks to Paul's Centurion American Express card. Claire had always chalked up the hours of golf games together and private phone calls and afternoons at the club to Paul just doing whatever it took to keep the congressman happy. But now, she understood that the connection ran deeper. She asked the sheriff, "Who was your friend at the FBI?"
"Why's that matter?"
"It's Johnny Jackson, isn't it?" Claire knew the man's bio. She'd sat through enough tedious introductions at countless rubber chicken dinner fundraisers. Congressman Johnny Jackson had been an agent with the FBI before entering politics. He had given Quinn and Scott millions, sometimes billions of dollars worth of government contracts. He had sent Captain Jacob Mayhew to the Dunwoody house to investigate the robbery on the day of Paul's funeral. He had probably also sent Agent Fred Nolan to rattle the bars on Claire's cage. Jackson was a very common last name, so common that Claire had never made the connection between the maiden name on her dead mother-in-law's headstone and Paul's generous benefactor. Until now. She told the sheriff, "He's my husband's uncle on his mother's side." Huckabee nodded.
"He worked in Atlanta on some kind of special task force."
"Did he ever help Paul get out of trouble?" Huckabee nodded again, but he didn't elaborate. The man probably did not want to speak ill of the dead. Should Claire tell him that Paul was alive? That her husband had abducted her sister? The phone started to ring again. Claire didn't move, but she said, "I should get that."
"You sure there ain't nothing else you want to tell me?"
"I'm positive." Huckabee reached into his shirt pocket and pulled out a business card.
"Cell numbers on the back."
He put the card on the kitchen table, then tapped it once with his finger before leaving. The phone kept ringing. Claire counted off the seconds as she waited for the sound of the sheriff's car door opening and closing, an engine starting, then the grind of wheels on the driveway as he backed onto the road. Claire picked up the phone.
Paul said, "What the fuck was that about?"
"Give me back my sister."
"Tell me what you said to Huckleberry."
She hated that he knew that word. It was something that belonged to her family, and this sadist she was talking to was no longer her family.
"Claire?"
"My father was watching the tapes of Julia when he killed himself." Paul said nothing. "Did you have something to do with that, Paul? Did you show my father the tapes?"
"Why would I do that?"
"Because you were already working on getting Lydia out of the way, and the last person left in my life who really mattered, who would help me no matter what, was my father." Claire was so distraught that she couldn't catch her breath. You killed him, Paul. You either did it yourself or you just as good as put the needle in his arm. Are you insane? Paul's voice rose with indignation. Jesus, Claire, I'm not a fucking monster. I loved your father. You know that. I was a pallbearer at his funeral. He stopped talking for a moment, leaving the impression that he was rendered speechless by her accusation. When he finally continued, his voice was low and calm. Look, I've done some things I'm not proud of, but I would never, ever do that to somebody I loved. You know how fragile Sam was toward the end. There's no telling what finally pushed him over the edge. Claire sat down at the kitchen table. She turned the chair so that Paul couldn't see the angry tears rolling down her face. You're acting like you had nothing to do with any of this. Like you were just an innocent bystander.
I was.
You knew what happened to my sister. You watched me struggle with it for almost 2 goddamn decades, and you could have told me at any time what happened to Julia, and you didn't. You just watched me suffer. I hated every second of it. I never wanted to see you hurt. You're hurting me now! Claire slammed her fist into the table, her throat spasmed with pain. The anguish was too much. She couldn't do this. She just wanted to lie down on the floor in a ball and cry herself senseless. An hour ago, she had thought she'd lost everything. But now she understood that there was always more, and that so long as he was alive, Paul was going to be there to take more. He said, How was I going to tell you what happened to Julia without giving you the whole story? Are you really saying you didn't know how to lie to me? He didn't answer. Why did you fake your death?
I didn't have a choice.
He paused for a moment.
I can't get into it, Claire, but I did what I had to do in order to keep you safe.
I don't feel very safe now, Paul. Claire struggled against the anger and fear that raged inside of her. You knocked me out. You took my sister from me. I didn't want to hurt you. I tried to be as gentle as I could.
Claire could still feel a pulsing pain in her cheek. She couldn't imagine how badly it would hurt if Paul hadn't held back.
What do you want?
I need the rest of the keychain to the Tesla.
Claire felt her stomach clench. She remembered Paul handing her the keys outside the restaurant before he pulled her into the alley.
Why did you give it to me?
Because I knew you'd keep it safe.
Adam would have retrieved the key tag from the mailbox by now. They'd transferred the work files in the garage. What else was on the thumb drive?
Claire, Paul repeated, what did you do with it?
She grasped for something that would throw him off.
I gave it to the cop.
Mayhew?
Tension filled his voice.
You have to get it back. He can't have it.
Not Mayhew.
Claire hesitated. Should she name Fred Nolan? Would Paul be relieved if she did, or was Nolan in on it?
Claire, I need to know who you gave it to.
It was in my hand.
Claire pushed back the terror threatening to cloud her thinking. She had to come up with a believable lie, something that would give her some kind of edge over Paul and buy her time to think.
In the alley, I had it in my hand. The man who killed you, who pretended to kill you, he knocked it out of my hand.
Paul spewed a volley of curses. His anger spurred Claire on. The police put it in one of those clear plastic evidence bags. She tried to spot the holes in her story. I used the spare at the house to drive the Tesla home, but I know the key tag is in evidence because they sent me a list for insurance. I had to forward it to Pia Lorit, our insurance agent. Claire held her breath and prayed that the story made sense. What was on the USB drive inside the key tag? Back in the garage, she had checked to make sure there were no movies. The only folder contained software. Or at least, that's what Paul had made it look like. He had always been exceptionally good with computers. Paul asked, "Can you get it back?" His words were clipped. She could practically see him clenching and unclenching his fists, her usual sign that her words were hitting their mark. In all the years of their marriage, she had never been afraid that he would use those fists on her. And now she was struck by the very real threat that he would use them on Lydia. Claire said, "Promise me you won't hurt Lydia. Please. I need that key tag." The underlying threat in his tone had a deadly stillness. "You have to get it for me." "Okay, but..." Claire started to babble. "The detective, Raymond, don't you know him? Somebody had to help you plan what happened in the alley. There were paramedics, police, officers, detectives. I know who was there." She knew that he did, because Paul had been right there in the alley alongside Claire. How long had he pretended to be dead? 5 minutes at least. Then the paramedics had put the blanket over him, and that was the last Claire had seen of her husband. She said, "Eric Raymond is the detective who's in charge of the investigation. Can't you call him?" Paul didn't answer, but she could feel his anger as if he was standing right in front of her. She tried again. "Who helped you do this? Can't you..." "I want you to listen to me very carefully." "Are you listening?" "Yes." "There are cameras all over the house. Some you can find, some you'll never see. Lydia's cell phone is tapped. The phone you're on right now is tapped. I'm going to call you on this landline every 20 minutes for the next 2 hours. That's going to get me far enough away so that I know I'm safe. And it's going to keep you there while I figure out what you're going to do next." "Why, Paul?" She wasn't just asking about what was happening right now. She was asking about everything that had come before. "Your father murdered my sister. I watched the tape. I know what he did." Her voice broke. She felt like her heart was breaking along with it. "I don't..." Claire fought back the agony. "I don't understand. I'm so sorry." Paul's voice filled with emotion. "We can get through this. We'll get through it." She closed her eyes. He was trying to soothe her. And the horrible part was that she wanted to be soothed. Claire could still recall what it had felt like in the den when she woke up and realized that Paul was alive. Her husband. Her champion. He was going to make all of this go away. "I never killed any of them." He sounded so vulnerable. "I promise you." Claire put her hand to her mouth so that she wouldn't speak. She wanted to believe him. She so desperately needed to believe him. "I didn't even know what Dad was doing until after the car accident. I went into the barn and I found all of his stuff." Claire bit her fist to keep from screaming. He was making it sound so logical.
I was just a kid on my own. Tuition was due at the academy. I had college to think about. It was good money, Claire. All I had to do was make copies and send them out. Claire couldn't breathe. She had spent that money. She had won jewelry and clothes and shoes paid for by the blood and suffering of those poor girls. I promise you, it was only a means to an end. She couldn't take this anymore. She was so close to her breaking point that she could practically feel herself bending. Claire, she said, the movies on your computer weren't old. I know. He was quiet for another moment, and she wondered if he was trying to think of a lie or already had one and was just pausing for effect. I was a distributor. I never participated. Claire struggled with the urge to believe him, to hold on to this one piece of her husband's humanity. Who is the masked man? He's just a guy. Just a guy. You don't have to worry about him. Paul sounded like he was talking about an asshole from work. You're safe, Claire. You're always safe. She ignored his comforts because her only other alternative was to believe him. What's on the USB drive? He went quiet again. Are you forgetting who gave you that Auburn key tag, Paul? I know there's a USB drive inside the plastic disc, and I know you want it back because you put something on it for safekeeping. He kept silent. Why? She couldn't stop asking the question. Why? I was trying to protect you. Is that some kind of stupid joke? The plan had to be moved up. There were other things in play. I tried my best to keep you out of it, but what happened with that guy in the alley? The sentiment was real, Claire. You know, I would lay down my life to protect you. Why do you think I'm still here? You're everything to me. Claire shook her head. She was dizzy from all of his excuses. He said, the people who are into this stuff are not nice people. They're powerful. They have a lot of money and influence. Political influence. He made a surprised sound. You were always so damn clever. Claire didn't want to be clever anymore. She wanted to be in control. It's your turn to listen to me. Are you listening?
Yes.
If you hurt Lydia, I will hunt you down and burn you into the fucking ground. Do you understand me? God, I love you like this. The phone clicked. He'd ended the call. Chapter 13. Lydia stared into the darkness of the trunk as she listened to the hum of wheels on the road. She had already run through all the things you were supposed to do if you ever got locked inside a trunk. Obviously, Paul had run through them, too. There were steel plates bolted to the back of the taillights, so Lydia couldn't punch them open and stick out her hand to wave down passing motorists. The emergency release latch had been disabled. There was another, thick, steel plate between the trunk and the back seat, so she couldn't kick her way to freedom. She was pretty sure the area was insulated for sound, too. She couldn't imagine Paul had padded the trunk for her comfort. Which meant that he had designed this car specifically to hold a prisoner. Lydia could hear Paul in the front of the car talking on the phone. There were only a few words she could make out, and they were all useless. Yes, no, okay. Paul's tone was brisk, so Lydia assumed he wasn't talking to Claire.
His voice was different when he talked to her sister. It made Lydia ill to think about how different it was, because Claire had been right. Paul made a conscious choice when he showed his dark side. She had seen it on full display when he'd opened the trunk to take Lydia's picture. She had watched him turn the darkness on and off like a light bulb. One minute he was telling Claire to go check Lydia's phone, and the next, his face was so frightening that Lydia was afraid she was going to lose control of her bladder. He had reached into the trunk and grabbed her face so hard that she felt the bones crushing. "Give me a reason to do to you what my dad did to Julia." Lydia had been shaking so hard when he closed the trunk that her teeth were chattering. She rolled onto her back to relieve some of the pressure in her shoulder. Her arms and legs were zip-tied, but she could still move if she was careful. The blood from the cut in her forehead had dried. Her swollen eye was leaking tears. The drumming in her head had subsided to an occasional dull thud. Paul had hit her with something heavy and solid back at the Fuller house. Lydia wasn't sure what he'd used, but it had pounded into her head like a sledgehammer. She hadn't even heard him coming. One moment, she was standing in the kitchen with her mouth open to give the 911 operator her name, and the next, stars were bursting in front of her eyes. Literally. Lydia had felt like a cartoon character. She tottered back and forth. She tried to brace herself on the kitchen table. And then, Paul had punched her again. Then again. Until she was unconscious on the floor. Lydia had managed to shout, "No!" before she blacked out. Obviously that wasn't enough to warn Claire, or maybe she'd gotten the warning but didn't know what to do. Lydia couldn't imagine her baby sister having the wherewithal to fight off Paul. Then again, she couldn't imagine her baby sister kneecapping her tennis partner. She guessed that Claire was asking herself the same questions that were running through Lydia's mind. Why had Paul faked his death? Why had he taken Lydia? What did he want from them? She didn't want to dwell on that last question, because Paul Scott was clearly obsessed with the Carroll sisters. His father had kidnapped and brutally murdered one of them. He had married another. And now, he had Lydia in the trunk of his car. A trunk that had obviously been prepared well ahead of time. Was he really going to do the same thing to Lydia that had been done to Julia? Was he going to murder her and rape her while she died? Julia, her vibrant big sister, her best friend, screaming as the machete cut through her neck and shoulder, writhing as Paul's father ripped her apart. Bile burned up into Lydia's mouth. She turned her head and spit as more came up. The smell was noxious in the confined space. She moved closer to the back of the trunk to get away from it. Her stomach felt hollow. She could not clear the image of Julia from her mind. Lydia heard a whimper come from her mouth. She could handle the sickness. But the grief would kill her before Paul had his chance. Julia, her innocent, tortured sister. There were 6 tapes in all, which meant Paul's father had taken time with her. She had been all alone in that barn, waiting for him, dreading his return, up until the final seconds of her life. Julia had actually looked at the camera as she was dying. She had stared straight into the lens, straight into Lydia's heart, and mouthed the word, "Help." Lydia squeezed her eyes shut. She let the feelings come uncensored. She should have been sweeter to Dee on the phone this morning.
She should have called Rick to tell him that she loved him instead of texting him that she would explain everything later. And Claire? She should have told Claire that she forgave her. Because Paul was not a human being. He was some kind of terrifying aberration who was capable of unspeakable deeds. Lydia fought back another whimper. She couldn't let herself lose it again. She had to be strong for what was coming next. Because Paul had a plan. He always had a plan. Lydia had a plan, too. She kept flexing her hands and moving her feet to make sure there was enough circulation in her body and clarity in her mind, because eventually, Paul would have to open the trunk again. Lydia was heavier than he was. Paul would have to cut the zip ties so she could climb out. That would be the only opportunity she would have to stop him. She kept going over the steps in her mind. At first, she would act confused. This would buy her eyes time to adjust to the sunlight. Then, she would move slowly and pretend that she was in pain, which wouldn't be a stretch. She would act like she needed help, and Paul, impatiently, would push her or shove her or kick her, and Lydia then would throw her weight into her shoulder and hit him as hard as she could in the neck. She wouldn't use her fist because the knuckles might glance off. She would stretch open her hand and use the webbing between her thumb and index finger, creating an arc that sliced nicely into the base of his Adam's apple. The thought of hearing his windpipe crack was the only thing that kept her going. Lydia took several deep breaths and let them go. She worked her hands and feet. She pulled up her knees and stretched out her legs. She rolled her shoulders. Having a plan helped the panic die down to a splinter, worrying the back of her brain. The engine changed speed. Paul was taking an off-ramp. She could feel the car slowing. There was a flash of red light around the steel plates, then a yellow pulse as the turning signal was engaged. Lydia rolled onto her back. She had gone over the plan so many times that she could practically feel Paul's throat crunching under her hand. There was no telling how much time had passed since he'd put her in the trunk. She had tried to count the minutes from when he took the photo, but she kept losing count. Panic could do that. She knew that the most important thing to do while she waited was to keep her mind engaged with something other than worst-case scenarios. She grasped for memories that didn't involve Paul Scott, or Dee and Rick, because thinking about her child and her lover right now in this dark death trap of a space would lead her down a path of no return. She had to go back several years for a memory that didn't somehow involve Paul. Because, even in absence, he had been such a huge part of her life for such a long time. Lydia was 21 when Claire met Paul at the math lab. 2 months later, he'd managed to tear Lydia from her family. She had always blamed Paul for her darkest days of addiction, but well before meeting him, she was so deep into self-destruction that the only memories she had were bad ones. October, 1991. Nirvana were playing at the 40-watt club in downtown Athens. Lydia sneaked out of the house. She climbed through her bedroom window, though no one would have noticed if she'd walked straight out the front door. She bummed a ride with her friend Lee, and she left behind all the misery and despair trapped inside the house on Boulevard. Julia had been gone for over 6 months by then. It was too hard to be at home anymore. When her parents weren't screaming at each other, they were so despondent that being around them made you feel like an interloper in their private tragedy. Claire had disappeared so far into herself that she could be in the same room with you for 10 minutes before you noticed her standing there. And Lydia had disappeared into pills and powder and grown men who had no business hanging around teenage girls. Lydia had adored Julia. Her sister was cool and hip, and outspoken.